Penny, I think you're all set to start.
Sorry, I'm looking at my computer clock and it says it's 9:57, and I am just going to start welcoming people as they're coming in. We won't get started till about maybe like 10:01 or so to give everyone a chance to get logged in. I know there's like sometimes an extra step and you have to enter your login and you weren't thinking you had to do that. So just to kind of give people some time to join us. This is Listening to Students of Color, Diversity and Inclusion Learning and Listening event from Calvin University. So I'm happy for those of us who are already here and joining us. And we're just kind of waiting a little bit to hit that start time as people are logging in and joining us. I just want to issue a welcome. I know it's been kind of a crazy season for all of us. And we're happy to be able to pull together this event with some wonderful student panelists joining us today. So, and I'm putting this together with two great colleagues from Calvin's Intercultural Student Development Office. And I'll introduce them both in a minute too when we get started officially. But if you're just joining us, welcome. This is Listening to Students of Color, a Diversity, Inclusion, Learning and Listening event with Calvin University. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. And like I said, we'll start officially in just a couple minutes. Start welcoming people. Again, kind of dragging my feet just a little bit for those people who are still logging into the WebEx window and trying to join us. But I'm welcoming everyone who's here today. Thank you for joining us for this listening and learning event, Listening to Students of Color. In the light of everything that's been happening, especially this summer, we have doubled down on our efforts to offer more kinds of learning events, especially for faculty and staff and our whole community, as we together try to really consider how we can be anti-racist and the steps that we can take as individuals and as an institution to ensure that our community continues to grow in their understanding of diversity and inclusion and really lives into and becomes a place where we are and we do what we claim, which is it's embodies and embraces diversity and inclusive excellence and is a welcoming and a place of belonging for all different kinds of people here. So again, I'd like to welcome everybody to this event, Listening to Students of Color. My name is Penny Lynn Dykstra Prime. I'm the Associate Dean for Diversity and Inclusion at Calvin University. And I'm joined today with my co-hosts and wonderful colleagues from the Calvin Intercultural Student Development Office. Kaisha Likely is here joining us, as well as Jane Bruin. And you'll see them a little bit later in the session. We are also very honored and really thankful to be joined today by a great panelist of students. And they'll kind of introduce themselves in a few minutes as they get started. And we've asked them to share some of their insights, how they're experiencing the current moment, some of their insights, so that we can listen to these important voices and perspectives in our community and work towards making all our learning spaces, our classrooms, our hallways, our community spaces, to make them more welcoming and a place of belonging for all the different people who are in our community. So a couple little items I wanted to mention. Everyone's mic, the participants have been pinned or have the ability to turn their mics and cameras on and off, but the rest of the audience, actually you're muted and that's on purpose. We wanna highlight and be able to pin and see then our student panelists at the appropriate times. During the student panelist section in the middle, we invite people, if you would like, to click on the chat and open that up. And if you have an insight or a question that you think you might like to have put towards our student panelists, feel free to enter that in the chat. And my colleague Jane and I will be monitoring that chat during the bulk of the session in the middle. At the end, there'll be a few minutes left, and Jane and I will then unmute and offer maybe to take in some insights or questions that came out of the chat. But we'll be doing that with the panelists. So there won't be an unmute for the whole audience at the end. So just if you have an insight or question, feel free to enter that into the chat. I also wanted to mention that in August, the Provost's Office is rolling out some additional resources, especially for faculty as you're preparing to teach this fall, but also for anyone who's interested to help us, again, live into our calling and our desire to be a place that values diversity and embodies inclusive excellence. So be on the watch out for those. We'll push them out in different ways, and we're getting a website up and running right now. So give us a little bit of grace with that. But we'll be posting them, especially sending out announcements of where to find them and how to do that through Kelvin News. So if you stay tuned in to Kelvin News, you'll be able to see when those resources are rolled out. And just a little appetizer teaser, two things. We're gonna be rolling out this week a resource, so a two-page handout and a short video to help our faculty in particular draft a meaningful and personal diversity and inclusion statement to include in their course syllabi and description. So we'd really encourage and ask everyone to consider doing that. And we're gonna provide you the resources to help you wrap your head around that and do that in a, like I said, a personal and a meaningful way. And the second thing, I know I already got some emails. People said, oh, we want to come to this session today, but we have a meeting or another conflict. Is it going to be recorded? And the answer is yes. The amazing Steve Klein is helping us with the technology today and is recording this session. So it'll take a little bit of time. You know, there's that delay in the processing, but hopefully later this week, we will make this session available for people who want to view it asynchronously or have something that they want to share with a colleague and want to direct them to this resource again. So with that, welcome everyone again. I'm going to turn it over to Keisha Likely from the Kelvin Intercultural Student Development Office and our amazing panel of students.
Good morning, everybody. As Penny Lynn just stated, my name is Keisha Likely. I serve in the Center for Intercultural Student Development. My role there is Assistant Director of Student Engagement and Thriving, and I'm so happy to be here with you all, as well as our panelists today. We're going to start off by having our panelists go ahead and introduce themselves, giving their name, their year, and their field of study.
Hey guys, my name is Dre. I'm Dre Davidson. I'm a senior and I'm studying social work and psychology.
Hi, I'm Shelton. I'm going to be a rising sophomore. I'm studying public health and international development.
My name is Frank Jones. I'm a rising senior. I'm studying film and media with a production concentration.
I'm Jake Williams. I'll be a junior this year. I'm studying computer science with a minor in business.
Hey guys, I'm Chenille. I'm going to be a senior this year and I'm studying exercise science.
I'm Samuel Carrasco. I'll be a junior in the fall and I'm studying social work.
I'm Maya Bryant. I just graduated studying kinesiology and dance.
Awesome. Again, we want to thank our panelists for taking this time out to spend with us and to do a deeper dive in the needs of students of color and kind of being vulnerable on this panel. So again, thank you, panelists, for taking this time out to do this. We're going to go ahead and get started with our first question. The way that this is going to work is not everybody has to answer the question, but you can feel free to answer the question because we are here to listen and we are here to learn and take a deeper dive. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Our first question is, what do you want your professors to know about your feelings in regards to the current racial climate?
Um, Personally, I think first and foremost, I would want all professors to know that as people of color, we are tired, honestly. And we've had an ongoing struggle that doesn't seem to have an end. And we just, when we come in on days when we're frustrated, it's not because we're angry at anybody else. It's just that we want help. We want our lives to be seen just as important in the media, just as important on campus, just as important in everyday life, just for things to be on an equal playing field, basically.
Yeah, just to second what Frank was saying, definitely tired and definitely like angry. The current racial climate has not been beneficial for the mindset or positive mindset for a lot of people within the Black community, and it's been really upsetting. And so I think you could definitely see that in the face of your students as this year goes about. And so just like keeping aware that, you know, we are going through things in the context of society. And so like, and not everything is going to always be about like the classroom and about what's going on within the current settings of like academics, because we have other things that we have to focus and worry about in terms of family, in terms of world setting, and in terms of all that. Like, we have other things that we have to focus on because of the position that we're put in by the police and by the institutions that that we're trying to partake in.
I'd like to add on with Shelton and Frank and say sometimes school doesn't feel meaningful at all, just because like being a, you know, like growing up being a Black man, it's like you thought education would save you, but like in the media and everywhere else is just like even that can't save you. So it's like no matter what I do, I'll be viewed as another Black man who's armed because of his skin, and that's the reality for so many others. And a lot of times, like, I'll be like, I need to do homework, but then sometimes I just ask myself, is it worth anything? Does like it mean anything? Is it gonna help me? And like, yes, it is in life, but like when dealing with law enforcement and especially the racial climate now, it just feels like hopelessness at some points. And then you add on the pandemic and everything, it's just like, what do I do? Where do I go from here? Like, what's meaningful? Like, what's gonna help me in life?
Would any of our females like to respond to this question?
I can hop in on this. I agree with like what all the guys said, that yes, it's very tiring and unsafe. For me personally, I find the racial climate to be kind of ostracizing, because I'm like a triple threat to this country, apparently, because I'm a woman, I'm Black, and I'm an immigrant. So when I go into the world, I get triple ostracized, and I would expect that at least at my school, I would be able to avoid this. But unfortunately, I'm ostracized even more, because it's like, where exactly do I fit in? Because people just see my face and they don't see me, or they see my culture and they don't see me. And I just get like ostracized from like every corner, and it's just really tiring.
For me, so I did introduce myself at the beginning because I was trying to figure out how WebEx worked. But I'm Ivana and I just graduated in May. And so how I feel about the racial climate. So I'm an international student, and before I came to the US, I like was just me, you know, I was just Honduran. But when I came here, I suddenly like became like Latinx and Hispanic and all these different labels. And I didn't exactly know like what that meant. So then I started to figure it out like little by little, and just like I feel like people make a lot of assumptions about you in this country based on that, like how you look like, where you come from. And I hadn't experienced that before until I came here. And so it's just, it's also been exhausting because even like with, especially with the climate right now, like sometimes I even feel unsafe like speaking Spanish when I'm like in the store or something like that, because I don't know, it just, it makes me feel like, I shouldn't be, because this is not kind of like the language of this country and things like that. So that's and I feel like the racial climate recently has just like exacerbating some of those fears that I had when I came in. So.
So our next question will be, how have you experienced or have you experienced a microaggression in the classroom or on campus in general?
So I think I'll hop in and answer this first, because if anyone knows me, they know I experience like a lot of microaggression like my other students of color have. I haven't experienced a lot in the classroom, so I didn't really know that it happened a lot in the classroom, but outside of the classroom, I experienced it a lot. I think I'll share these two brief stories, one in the classroom and one inside the dorms. For me, the biggest one that really factored into me was when I took this sociology class, where I thought I'd be safe because, you know, sociology, we're studying human behavior, and then we'll get into some nice juicy topics of discussions. But in that classroom environment, I felt really unsafe and really attacked in that class. Just a background story, there were only like 5 students of color in the whole class, and it was like 25 in total. And we would usually always sit in the front. And what this professor would do was that when we got to this topic on racism in the sociology class, is that we had to do this activity where we had to identify this person on the screen, and we had to identify the race just by looking at different body parts. So at first, only the Black students were like participating in this activity, because we were excited, because as we all know, Beyonce is like a really popular icon in like culture. So anyone can like identify from just a body segment. So we were like all excited to identify and say, that's Beyonce, hands down. So after he revealed who the person was, lo and behold, it was Beyonce. And like, we were all excited because like, she was a good like representation of what, you know, of like women of power. And he stopped during the middle of that class after the activity. And what he said is, he pointed out that, I noticed that all the Black children in this class are sitting next to each other right now. I find this very interesting. And then the entire classroom just got silent, and every student just looked at us, silently looking at us saying, oh yeah, they're all sitting together. And I felt like really awkward and uncomfortable, but I thought it would stop there, but apparently it just got worse because we had to watch a documentary on Black hair for our class. And as we were watching the documentary, our professor was sitting, so like the projector was right here and the professor was sitting right here. And conveniently on that day, the Black students were sitting next to each other again, and we were reacting because we are familiar with braids and we're familiar with weave. So we know what this documentary already is about. So we're there and we're talking. We're like, oh yeah, I do that, I do that. And what this professor did was that he sat like this, and he looked at each and every single one of us. Like, he didn't look at anyone else in the class, just us. And it was so obvious that he was staring us down. And I had like one of my friends say, I'm gonna go to the bathroom because I feel uncomfortable right now because he's just staring at us. And that's when I noticed that he actually was staring at us through the entire 50-minute documentary. And at the end of the class, he says that, yeah, you guys are probably going to write me a bad review anyway, but I don't care, because what's Calvin going to do, fire me because of tenure? You can write whatever you want. And that, for me, I felt so unsafe and attacked in that class. And my other stories in the dorms, this one sticks with me a lot because it just shows the discrepancy between cultures, and that I don't think Calvin's doing a lot to address that. But anyone who knows me knows that I love to cook, and I love to cook for people. And my form of cooking, of course, is different because I'm from Jamaica, so I cook a lot of cultural dishes. But one day I decided to like defrost some meat in the sink. Anyone who knows that when you're cooking, you defrost food in the sink, not the fridge, because that's unsanitary, especially when you have like all the residents putting their food and open containers there. You don't want blood dripping in your food. So I put it in the sink. It was just a small tray, and it was a two-sided sink. Both sides were empty. So I just put it there, and then I went to my room. My room is next to the kitchen, and everyone knew that because I was on leadership. So everyone knew me and knew where my dorm was because I made it clear because I'm on leadership. And what happened was, when I went back to the kitchen later that day to prepare my food, my tray of meat was like submerged in dirty pasta water with leftover noodles, and the other side of the sink was completely empty. Like, it was empty, sparkling clean and empty. And I was confused as to why they would dump it on my food that I planned to cook. And just a disclaimer, I am one of 2 people who only cook in the coffee kitchen. And everyone knows that because I'm always in there cooking. So I made like a really calm, rational decision, and I texted in the group chat and I said, hey guys, somebody dumped some pasta water on my meat and I didn't really like that at all. So in the future, I understand that this is a community space and we have to share. Please come get me to remove my stuff because I have no problem moving my stuff. And I'm sorry if I created an inconvenience for anyone, but at the same time, I did not respect that someone did that. And someone commented in that group chat that, and I quote, I will remember these words for the rest of my life. The coffee kitchen is for everyone to use. If you want somewhere to put your meat, it belongs in the refrigerator. And I said, you don't defrost meat in the refrigerator because that is unsanitary, especially in a community living. And so I went to report it to my RA. And when I reported it to my RA, I felt personally attacked because she did not address the other person that made that comment on a public platform, which was the group chat. Instead, she said, well, how about you just start just putting it aside and not in the kitchen, like just put it in the refrigerator, put it in a container. And she kept giving me all these alternate solutions. And all I just kept saying was, I did all that, but they still did this. And then she's saying that going forward, oh, you know, like we just have to like try to do community living and stuff. And I just felt like she wouldn't understand my culture. And for me, that was really traumatizing.
I've definitely had my share of microaggressions at Calvin, whether it was coming from a supervisor who told me I was fly for a black guy, whether it was in the classroom and people trying to diminish my experiences, or whether it was some white boy saying the N-word in a song or just saying it in dialect and in front of me. So I've had my share of microaggressions at Calvin, and another one would be, especially in the classroom, people surprised when I speak up because I'm articulate, and I've actually had people come up to me and be like, oh, you're so articulate. And I'd be like, what did you expect? Or like when people touch my hair without asking, like, that's another one. But then they're so surprised at the texture and how it feels. Like, oh, it's so soft and curly. And it's like the surprise of it being so soft because they expect it to be really hard and kinky. Yeah, those are just a couple of experiences that I've had here on campus, and I'll let some other panelists speak.
Jake, you may have to hear. Kind of similar to Dre, and like I have a few close friends in this call, so they can like attest to this. Like my biggest issue on campus isn't direct, like face-to-face confrontation. Like I just don't have that problem. I don't know if it's cause I'm lucky or what, but my biggest issue for sure is like when we go into like public spaces, whether it's like the dining hall or just like the gym or something, cause I play basketball. It's like the way that people look at me or us from across the room. I personally, like, and again, my friends will attest to this, I get very upset. I get kind of mad, angry, frustrated because of the way that I feel people will stare at me from across the room to the point where whatever I'm doing, I can't focus on it anymore. It happens in the classroom, in the dining hall. Like, I put my food down and been like, crossed my arms. Like, you know, I don't like the way this kid is looking at me right now. There's no reason for somebody to be staring at you from across the room when you're minding your own business. There's absolutely no reason. You're not drawing attention to yourself. And, you know, whether that's on the pathway or at the gym, wherever the setting is, you know, it doesn't really make sense to be the center of attention in a setting where there's no source, right? You should not be the source just because you look a little bit different. And that's always been my biggest issue, because me and my friends know when, as soon as we go outside, walk to class, we put our headphones in, kind of look at the ground, and just go from point A to point B. It's about getting to your destination with the least amount of interaction, unless it's among ourselves. And a lot of times, you know, it feels like almost unnatural to do that because of the way that people go about interrupting your day. It doesn't have to be direct. Somebody can stop you and say words. They can say whatever they need to disrupt your day. But a lot of these issues and these confrontations are nonverbal. Like, it's all about body language. I've literally had people from across the room like look at me, and like I've seen my friends as well, like be looked at in disgust from across the room, as if like, why are you here? Why are you there? What are you doing? It could be because the way we're talking, or like how much noise we're making with the conversation. The exact same thing any other group of people would do. But just because we look a different way, just because we go about expressing ourselves in different ways, we are still subject to this nonverbal, like, onslaught, so to say. So I would say that's my biggest issue in a lot of these places on campus.
I could go on about forever to share a couple stories. I remember freshman year living in the dorms, which was an event often excluded, but you know, when a lot of the other white girls would get together and go do events and things like that. But one event in particular, I was, you know, kind of just talking to my roommate, how I am now, and saying like, hey, this thing that you're doing, it's not okay with me. Like, we need to talk about this. And she felt threatened and scared and didn't come back that night. So classic angry black woman stereotype. And the RA called me over. I'm like, I was literally just talking to her about our living situation and the things that, you know, are going on. So that was one. I remember sophomore year, I was sitting in lab and we were analyzing our hair under the microscope. So I was really excited. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then I think I was one of maybe three or four students of color in the class. And the professor comes over to me and proceeds to touch my hair, which is 100% not okay, even if she did ask for permission because of that power structure. And then we went on about, you know, the class. And then later, she came up to my table and was asking me all sorts of questions about my hair and everything else. So it was just really not okay. And then the last story that I'll share is when I was in one of my classes, and we were talking about some of the social divides that were happening amongst one of the groups in the Bible. And to make it more relatable for us, I guess, so to speak, he described this as like the white church, or, you know, white evangelicals or Presbyterian. And they were well educated, they would understand the New York Times, the pastor, you know, probably went to seminary. And then when they spoke of the black church, they said that they would be uneducated, probably wouldn't understand the New York Times, congregation would have low education, and the pastor probably wouldn't go to seminary. And the churches, the services would be very long, drawn out, very excitable, that sort of thing.
I'll talk. So I haven't had that many specific instances besides. So my old roommate said the N-word, but he didn't say it to me. He said something he saw on the TV. So he said that. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really know how to react, because like, I never thought like anyone would say that to me. And so that whole situation ended up just like getting blown up because he ended up moving out down the hall, whatever. And then another time, a white girl said it in the room while I was in the room. And it was like, it was me and like two of my other friends. I forget who it was, but it was like, what do I do? Like, if I get mad, then people are going to say I'm blowing over. And like, I can't like get like super angry, because then I'm like that 6'4" black guy that's angry. And then I get looked at a different way. But like, a lot of it is what Jacob really said, is just like, just knowing you're out of place. Like, like I consider myself a super self-aware person, but I don't know if like that's a good thing or a bad thing, because I'm only super self-aware when I'm like at Calvin, when I'm walking, like in the dining hall. Like I personally don't like going to the dining hall by myself, just because I know I'm not sure if there's anybody I'm gonna see there, and I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb. You know, it's like, you know, when all eyes are on you, like if all of us go to lunch together, it'd be 6-7 of us all go to lunch, and we all know like we're getting looked at because we're tall black men walking through a sea of whiteness. And it's like, I don't want to be the center of attention right now. You know, I just want to like go eat lunch because I'm tired from classes, or like just chill my friends, you know. It's like I want to be treated like everyone else, but I know I'm not, because how I look and how I talk, or how loud and noisy I might be, or my dialect, or what I'm really passionate about, because everyone knows like I'm really passionate about racial justice and things like that. So it's like I don't want to be seen like, I want to be seen like a normal person, just like everyone else. You know, I wanted to be able to just people walk past me and like not have a second thought about it. I don't want to have to walk to class. You know, sometimes I think I'm like, I don't really mind walking to class with my headphones in. But then like when you hear from other people like, oh, I didn't know you were this nice, this and that. It's like, why would you think I'm not? And it's like, oh, it's because I look down at the ground. I don't really smile. But it's like, When I raise my head and look, it's kind of depressing. Like, Calvin is a good education for sure, but it's like, how come I have to be considered built different to go to Calvin and all that? Why can't I see other people like me here? And like, of course, like there's the community of people of color there, and like really appreciate all you guys for being there, getting your education as well. But it's like, why can't other people that look like me be here? Why does it take like a special type of person to go to a predominantly white institution and succeed there? You know what I mean? And so that's really just a lot about it. And yeah.
Thank you for sharing. Our next question is, what can faculty and staff do to provide a welcoming space for students of color to thrive on campus?
I feel like staff and faculty, the most important thing for especially just everybody to know going forward, especially as we're going into this kind of time of uncertainty, is that first and foremost, I wanted to get this out the way. We are doing a panel and talking about like all our experiences and everything, but we do not speak for every Black person. We do not speak for the experience of my experience is different from everybody's experience on the screen. So listening to one person or listening to a panel it's a great start, but also it should go a step further to want to learn more about the students' lives that we all have different struggles. We all have different problems. Some people, like Jacob said, he deals with less face-to-face racism as opposed to Chanel, who had a lot of face-to-face racism happen. So a very big important thing is to make sure that you understand that the dynamics of the classroom, first and foremost, if you have a person of color in your classroom, they start off uncomfortable because it might be one or two of them in that classroom. So they're already on edge. And if you have one or two people and you don't know them, like that's even like more scary. Like it's a blessing to have one of your friends in your classroom, which is a sad thing to say. So I think that especially as a professor, when you see certain things happen, like even certain students, like white students talk about different issues. If you see a Black student speaking up about that, Don't silence them, but actually offer support. Actually check that white student to let them know like this is not acceptable. Like you can't do things like this. Like just the smaller things that can make for a safer space in a classroom, or even just going to Calvin, as opposed to instead of trying to de-escalate the situation. Sometimes you have to allow that whole fiasco, that whole little problem to manifest itself. So sometimes if a student of color is talking to a white person about how they are impacted by systematic racism or something like that in the middle of class, sometimes that discussion needs to happen, because if it's hushed or shushed right then and there, then that white person first and foremost has the idea, even if my professor doesn't agree with me, I know they're gonna shut it down for me, and I'm not gonna have to actually be exposed and change my ways. Because a lot of Calvin has this quote, kind of guarding and nurturing about it, that kind of keeps it in a bubble. But that bubble has to be exposed sometimes, because we are literally two steps away from the real world. So sometimes you have to get your bubble burst and realize that your way of thinking is wrong. There's no way to sugarcoat it. Like, on this issue, like, everybody should have rights. So I would say just offer support, basically, in times when you can see it.
I really like how Frank said, read the room. You know, that's really important, like, for professors to have, and students, but like, this is geared towards professors, in all honesty. But to be able to read the room, you need to be able to read yourself. All right, like, as a professor, like, you're overseeing like 30 kids. Like, we're at a small school, so you have like somewhere between 20 and 30 kids in your room. You need to be able to look in the mirror first and understand for yourself what is happening. This isn't the responsibility, like, you know, there's like 8 to 10 panelists in here, right? It's not just us, it's not our responsibility as the students of color to get you to understand these things. It's not our job. We go to school and we have other responsibilities, just like you went to school, you had your responsibilities, and you have a family, and you have bills to pay, you have a job, right? It is not our job to take on all that extra added pressure to teach you these things. You need to go and educate yourself, just as you suck out, as, I don't even know if that's the word, just as you look for educational opportunities when you were younger to get to this point, to be a professor, right? We come to school and we come to your classroom and you expect us to learn and participate and study and do all these exams and, you know, try to do well in the class, right? You want us to put our time in, our effort, our energy. We understand that. But it has to go both ways, right? It might not be us wanting you to read the same text or anything, right? In that area of study, you are a professional, you get it. But when we talk about the racial climate, for the most part, knowing the makeup of like the Calvin staff, I'm almost willing to bet a lot of money or my life on the fact and idea that a lot of you do not in full understand this racial climate. You are not professionals, because you do not walk around and live all of this and what is going on in its entirety. So, I mean, we're going to talk about like action steps. I think that's the next question, but pay very special attention to the things that are going on and take notes, take mental notes. It's like, okay, well, like we're a Christian institution, right? So this can be very straightforward for us, right? It's, are we following the Lord? Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing? Love thy neighbor. Am I doing that? Are these people doing that? Am I seeing this in the media? Is this a reflection of the world that God created for us, that he wants for us, right? That is pretty much the most straightforward way you can handle or take this. Is this a reflection of the world that we are here to, you know, create, that we are here to be a part of? And if the answer is no, then, you know, reflect on that. Look in the mirror. What can I do? What have I not done? What resources do I need to seek out so I can do my part? Because you expect us to do that as students when we're struggling in class, to come to you and ask for help? Totally fine for you to be a professor. You're still a lifelong student anyway. It's totally fine for you to go seek out other resources as well and be a student, because we're all in the same boat in the grand scheme of things. we all don't know everything and we all have more to learn.
I think that was a good response, Jacob. I like that. For me, I think it's the surprise factor. A lot of times I've felt like I didn't want to necessarily do my best because of how surprised my teachers or my professors have been at the work that I could produce, as if to say me being able to do that is not common. There's too much weight on students of color to like excel above and beyond what is normal, and there's too much praise for students of color just doing things of mediocrity. I think that I'm not saying that I'm an exceptionally well student, but I'm praised like crazy for doing things that I don't think that are worth being praised like crazy for. And I think that is because of the color of my skin. Like, you shouldn't be surprised by the fact that I'm in the classroom. You shouldn't be surprised by the fact that I'm in college. You shouldn't be surprised by the fact that I can do this, that, or the other. And by professors being surprised by that, I think that sets a tone for the students in the classroom as well. And then they start to be surprised by the fact that, oh, you can speak so well, or oh, you can do this, that, or the other. Like, you know how to answer this problem well. You know how to do this well. Like, you shouldn't be surprised by the fact that I can use my brain. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really discouraging when you look at it that way, because everything you do is like, oh, you're way better than all these people around you, but when you're really not. Like, and it shouldn't be a surprise that I'm smart. Like, it shouldn't be a surprise that I can use my brain. Like, I'm not an outlier. I'm not any different than anybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't understand why it has to be emphasis, or there has to be such a strong emphasis on the excellence of a single individual when really everybody has the same potential in terms of learning, and in terms of being able to go to a college, or in terms of being able to understand a concept. I think that professors need to just be willing to just or students of color for just being a student in the classroom. I don't think you need to exceptionalize your student and say and be amazed at every single thing that they do. And I think sometimes I've been put off by the eagerness to say that I'm amazing at doing something that's really not that amazing.
On the other side of that, I think that I know my experience personally is that I go to many classes. Man, my voice is gonna mess up. I'm trying to talk. Give me 1 second. I've had many experiences where I went to class and I was either the only Black student or I was the only person of color in general. And I feel like our students shouldn't have to go to class feeling like Ruby Bridges every day. Like, we shouldn't be the only and representing our race. And I think that professors need to identify that. Like, don't try to do this whole colorblind thing and like act like you don't see students that are different in the class. But I've had a friend who was the only guy in the class, and the professor emailed him and was like, you know, feeling like you're the only guy in the class, like, do you want to like drop the class and all this and all that? And I was like, that's crazy, because our Black students don't even get that when they're the only Black students in the class. And like, I feel like gender and race are different, but like, one's up here and the other one's like, you know. And I think that we need to recognize that we have like classes where there are like only one person representing an entire race. And in those classes, I think professors can help if they individually like ask that student, like, how can I support you? Or like, what do you need to like be able to like succeed in this class? Because it's like the odds are already stacked against you going in, because you feel like you don't belong. If you feel like you don't belong, like, that's what you're going to be thinking about a lot in the class instead of like the work that you should be doing. I think another thing professors can do is include perspectives of people who are not white in the classes. I feel like a lot of the learning that we do is whitewashed and it's not accurate. And like me personally, I don't like to sit in a class where I know that I've been given like misinformation. And also it would just make me more interested if I heard perspectives of people who look like me, because I think representation really does matter. And that's another thing, because the faculty and staff at Calvin isn't very diverse. So it's hard to come to an institution where you're already a minority and then you don't even see representation in like the faculty and staff. Like, I think that to see more. And I think that the campus is kind of addressing that, especially with the policies of like professors having to be CRC, because as we all know, the CRC is a predominantly white organization, which means that most of our professors be white. So I think something else the staff could do is address racist policy that Calvin upholds. And because it's not enough just to be not racist, you need to be anti-racist, which means we need to actively look into how we can make this college like safe for all of the students.
Going off of,
I think just overall, this principle of inclusion, like you aren't special because you have students of color in your class. That's the expectation. That's the bare minimum. So we're inclusive when you're kingdom oriented, when you're exemplifying all of who Christ is, when you're recognizing, shoot, all of my students are, you know, doing well, but there's these couple of students that might need some extra support, or you're intentionally trying to get to know all of your students and building relationships with your students of color, just as you would easily do so with your white students. Our classroom is inclusive when you are not just showing white men in a suit on your presentation, and instead are actually taking the time to find other, you know, people of color and represent them in your class. Your classroom will be inclusive when you say, hey, this jacked up thing happened in our field and we're gonna talk about it. I'm not just gonna show you, oh yeah, this white person created this thing and it had absolutely no harm to anybody else. So I think just really being Christ, like, I mean, that's the goal, that's the mission, that's the expectation, if you want to call yourself a Christian, talking about being an anti-racist, talking about, you know, horrible things that are going on, that's the expectation.
I think going off of what Maya and Dre said before, I would just say that, like, in my classes, I would really appreciate in especially I'm thinking about my capstone course that I took, where we learn about all these different economic thinkers, and all of them were white males. So I was we get to choose in the end, like, an economist that we want to focus on, and then you get to choose, and even the perspectives of students were, like, I didn't see any economists of color. Especially women of color. So even when we talk about women and in other fields too, especially because I am in the STEM field, so I think with social classes it's like easier maybe, or it should be, to kind of like talk about these issues. Maybe in math classes it's kind of harder, but at the same time I think there's a lot of women of color in mathematics and engineering, computer science, that have done good things for the field, to advance research in the field, and those perspectives are completely ignored when we learn about all these things. So I think the curriculum needs to be revised to make sure that we include all those perspectives and how they are advancing the research in that particular field. For me personally,
I think one thing is, it's like minor instances, but like when something big like George Floyd or Trayvon Martin, rest in power to everyone else too, who lost their lives to police brutality and racism. But I think one thing is, like, if we have to come to class next day and you've seen it also, because these are pretty big things. So on the news, these are like, this is everywhere. So So I think it would be important, like, to acknowledge it, because that's not something you can just brush over and go like, oh, welcome to class again, isn't that, like, that is something serious, like, because it doesn't just affect me and other people of color, it affects everyone else, because you're the professor, you're setting the tone of what is allowed in the classroom. So if you brush over that, then now everyone else thinks they might be able to do whatever they want, say whatever they want, because they know you're not going to say anything about it. And sometimes it's not even about like setting the tone for the classroom, but it's also paying attention to the people of color in your class, because a lot of times I'll come to class and something will have happened. I'll see it on the news, on my phone. I'll just be sad in class. And it's like, what more can I do? But like, just the simple fact of effort of trying to acknowledge and trying to understand the pain I'm going through and what's going on in my world and how that's affecting me as a student means a lot. So like, unfortunately, because of the climate we're in and the world we live in, something else like George Floyd will happen. So when something like that happens, it would be appreciated if the next day or the following week or whenever it happens, like, for you as a professor, just to acknowledge it, you know, like, you can come in class, say, you know, class, today, I'm gonna just talk about this for a little bit, but just the simple fact of acknowledgement means like so much. Like, you see what I'm going through, and you want everyone else to like know what's happening in the real world. And I forgot who said this, but I think it was Jay, when we talked about like the CRC bubble, like a lot of it. So I went to Potter's House, and so like that's kind of has a bubble of their own and everything. But like, when you go around Grand Rapids, you know, everyone is in a bubble. And a lot of times the racism is so subtle because like people just don't know it and they refuse to acknowledge it. And so like, just acknowledging all these things is like means so much, because to me, it's mind-boggling that some people don't see the racism in Grand Rapids when I live on Burton. So like, the street across from me is way different than the street I live on. And like, they're like this, and it's like, why is the wealth gap so different? But it's literally like less than a couple feet apart. And it's just, for me at least, it's just simple things like that. You know what I mean? And also like, if I'm the only Black student in the class, I can't speak for everyone, but, and you as a professor see something on there, or anyone else that's watching, you see something on the news, feel free to ask me, because I like answering questions like that. I like helping educate other people, because we're all in this together. Like, we're all fighting racism together. And so to me, it's not fair if I have this knowledge and someone asks me to not help them along their journey, especially as brothers and sisters in Christ, as we're supposed to help and build each other up to see a better world. I think that's very important.
Going off. Go ahead. Okay. Going off what Sam said about just having professors have conversations after hard things happen, I feel like that's one of the reasons I came to Calvin, because they always talked about how there are people here are willing to have the hard conversations. And I feel like, in a way, that's true. But also, in another way, like, that hasn't been true to my experience, because there have been many times where things have happened that have affected not only even Black students, but like people of color in general, or like just people in general. And I would come to class the next day and professors wouldn't say anything about it. And in doing that, I just felt like they were ignoring my experiences as a Black man. And if you can't see me, if you can't see my experiences, or as a Black man, like, you can't see me for who I am. So that's like, that goes to another component of not being seen in the classes that you go to. And I think that we definitely need to have those conversations. We need to let our students know that we do see them. And it's more than just like a Black Lives Matter video. Like, it's more than all that. Like, you need to show your students that their lives matter. And like, I feel like, yeah, we already know that Black Lives Matter. Like, Black Lives Matter, whether white people say it or not. So like, when you are saying that Black Lives Matter, I hope that that's a testament to you to be like, oh, okay, Black Lives Matter, so I need to make policy that shows that Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, so I need to do this and do that. I need to be anti-racist. So it's more than just saying it. It's a testament that needs to be exhibited throughout Calvin, not just videos, not just through, you know, like things like this. I think it needs to be active. It needs to be an ongoing thing. And yeah.
Real quick, I know what Sam said was very true. And I think there are a lot of people that can sit in your classroom and answer questions about race, but that's not every Black student. And so before you do that, before you engage in that conversation, you need to understand your students. And I think that there have been several panelists who have already made this statement clear, but just have a conversation with your students, maybe email them before you try to understand who they are before you engage in that conversation, because we're all different and we all go about this in different ways and we all understand this and we're passionate about it in different ways. And so you can't just, there can't be an assumption that is going to be received the same by everybody.
I think it's like really important that professors understand that they truly understand like the authority, like the power that they have being in the position that they're in. Yes, you have control over grades, right? That's just, you know, that's whatever, right? That is fake power, in my opinion, because in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't have anything to do with humanity, okay? When I say understand like power and authority, you have the opportunity to influence somebody's life. You have the opportunity to change somebody's life, all right? Somebody else's child, when they come to you and sit in your classroom, you now play a role in their development. Now, you might have one or two children of color like in your classroom. We're watching you. Like, we sit there every day, like we're observing. We might not say anything because we might be uncomfortable, but actions speak louder than words. You know, you could come in and put a Black Lives Matter PowerPoint presentation up, you know, like that is just a PowerPoint, right? It's, you know, we don't care about that. It's what are you going to do? What conscious decisions are you going to make to be a part of the cause, to promote the movement, promote the cause? You know, you, in terms of like societal levels, are on a different field than us, okay? Students have different things that they can do to promote the cause than professors do. And again, like we'll talk about action steps, that's like the next question. But understand, you're not just responsible for the curriculum, okay? The curriculum does not trump humanity. If your curriculum is more important to you than helping people mature and develop into, you know, what we are supposed to be, then I should say, you know, something's not right. Something's not right. That doesn't mean like you're a bad person or anything. That just means your focus is not in the right direction. And maybe you need to pray on it, but you need to pray that your focus shifts back to the straight path, because ultimately that is your responsibility to mankind. It is not to give a child a grade. It is to give them an opportunity to be better. That is the purpose of education. That is why we go to school. We go to school to learn how to make a difference in the world. We don't go to school to get the diploma, to get the certificate, because a piece of paper can, you know, you can lose that real easy. You could lose it, or it could be burnt up or ripped up. All right, that is temporary. But what you learn and store up here, what you store in your heart, that is forever. That's not temporary. And you have the opportunity to help people to do that for themselves and do that for others in their community.
Thank you so much. Our final question for our panelists is, what action steps needs to be taken moving forward?
I'm gonna jump in on this because there's two things that Calvin really does that bothers me. And I think that this could really need some work. The first thing is this CCE credit, so the cross-cultural engagement credit, which makes no sense for me because you can escape this by like doing a semester in like what, Britain? Like learning how to write papers? Like, but yeah, at the same time, we have to take 3 PE classes, 2 different religion classes, and 2 types of history classes. But I can escape getting some cross-cultural engagement by going to some exotic place to study something that's not even related to any cultural engagement at all. I think that needs to be looked at to say like, okay, we're gonna actually have a list or a variety of classes and say you can take them. And I understand that some faculties may not be trained to like lead these classes, but that's where you come in to educate yourself to provide these classes and make them optional. Or what Calvin can do is, because I know that sometimes they have some exemption classes that they can take online on their website, like for like a computer class, and you can take the quiz and be exempted from taking it. Why can't Calvin do something like that on their website and have like, I don't know, like a Black Lives Matter presentation that say you take this to educate yourself, and at the end of it, you get your CCE credit. And that's, or like just any culture at all, and you just put it up on the website and say you can take this, or you can go through this entire presentation and interact with it, and you get your CCE credit. But I really think that needs to be revised because a lot of people can escape that by just going to these really nice places. Another thing that I want, that I think Calvin can do better of, is creating a more efficient platform on where we can report teachers or faculty when we experience like moments of microaggression or we experience things that don't fit right. I know for a lot of people or for a lot of students of color, when they experience any form of aggression from like faculty, the first thing they said when you ask them, well, did you report it? They're like, I don't know how to report it. And I didn't know if I should report it. And I didn't want to cause a scene or whatever, which causes us to silence our frustration. And that's not healthy because I don't know about anyone else, but when something happens to me, it sits with me. And every day I ask myself, could I have done something? Was there really something I could have done? Should I have let this happen? Because now like what happened to me can happen to someone else and the cycle will continue. So I guess what Calvin could do is maybe create a space on their website where we can come and like fill out a form to like report a professor, like it's like a complaint form. So like we'd say, okay, this is what happened. Did it sit right with us? And like you could form like an investigation or something. And like professors could even put this link on their syllabus so we can find it easily. But I really think there should be a space where we can come to someone to say, hey, I am not being treated fairly here. What should I do?
I have 2 things, but I'm only gonna do 1 because I wanna space it out. But so I use like, when I talk to people about this, I use like the letter A. It's not an acronym. It's just like, I have a bunch of words that start with A. So it's like easy to remember. It's kind of like in a process. So the first thing I have is address. All right, so the words are address, acknowledge, advocate, and ask. Address means like it pertains more to your field, whatever field you have more control of or play part in. You know, address the works of Black scholars in history who have contributed to the development of your field. You know, I mean, that's just very simply put. There is no way that this is difficult. Like, this is not a difficult thing to do as a professor. Like, you know, you kind of get to decide what you're going to show students. We talked about this. You have that authority, right? There are, and I kind of forgot who said this. I think it was Dr. Lloyd Page and one of the other panels. She said she went through her education without knowing that there were other African Americans or African American women who were studying the same thing or who were prominent in the same career as her that she was studying. And she's not the only one. You know, from elementary school, kind of all the way even up till now, there are very many instances where we miss out on opportunities to learn about the people that look like us. We miss opportunities to learn about the history and the people who have made impact, you know, just on science, culture, art, everything. You know, don't strip us of that opportunity, because that can change somebody's life. That can be inspiring. The next one I have written out, acknowledge the fact that there are white students and professors who have racial biases. All right, we're not perfect. You know, so just acknowledge that and the fact that you can play a part in that. So try to establish relationships and create a safe environment for your students of color who may feel unwelcomed or uncomfortable, right? We are going to sit in these classrooms. We've all, like, we just heard everybody say that they've been in classrooms where they're one of two students of color, right? Acknowledge that as a professor and try, like, just try to build a relationship. That doesn't mean, like, it's going to be different for everybody. Some people aren't going to be comfortable if you pull them aside after class. Some people might be more comfortable with the email. I've seen professors have a mandatory assignment just to get to know all their students. It's like, write some stuff down on a note card, come see me in office hours, let's talk. Take like 10 minutes. Just make a conscious effort to try to understand where your students are coming from, to understand who they are. Because then when you go to have those difficult conversations in class or outside of class, they will be so much more willing to talk to you and be honest with you than they would otherwise. Because to be honest, like, some people just don't like being talked to by people they don't know. Like, strangers, stranger danger, like, that's a real thing. Okay, like, I don't like talking to people all the time that I don't know. I will not talk to you. I used to say, like, I won't talk to you if I don't know you. People are still like that. So be conscious about that and try to bridge the gap in the relationship. Advocate, and this is big, advocate for professors and faculty and staff of color to be hired in your field. Okay. This is something that, like, we all know Calvin is lacking in. To be honest with you, I don't care how much on the little website or the advertising pages, I don't care how many students or staff of color you use to try to bring people in. We need to see it when we get on campus. We walk around campus all the time. Like, Black staff are leaving. And on top of that, it's kind of hard just to see some of them anyway. Their offices and just where they are not always easy to find. They're not as accessible as, like, other people on campus at all times. And that's also due to the lower volume of staff that there is. Like, they just have responsibilities. And because there's not that many people, we can't find mentors on campus, essentially, who aren't already being overwhelmed by the amount of work that they have to do. So do bet, like, that is something that professors can play a very large part in. It's like, we need more staff of color. We need more representation. We want to diversify our offices, because when you do that, you get more perspectives on education. So when you have meetings and stuff and decide anything that has to do with curriculum, or you're bouncing ideas off of each other, you are now trying to tailor the experience to a whole community instead of just three quarters of it. Right, or instead of just whatever percentage of it, you are now trying to tailor the experience to the entire community. And last thing I have is ask your students of color for feedback. You should want to know, like, how you're doing more so than the little course evaluations that we have to fill out at the end. I don't like filling those out. If you ask me to, like, if you want to have a conversation about your class, I guarantee you, if we talk for 15 minutes, I can give you more than that little course evaluation with the bubbles is going to give you. Like, that doesn't encapsulate your entire class. I know it's easier to do that because there's so many students, like, I understand, but ask your students for feedback. I was like, hey, like, I just need you to write something up. Don't do that. Like, if you have students of color, especially with the racial climate and just the social climate now, you know, take advantage of that opportunity that you have to access this kind of feedback, because you know, one, you just never know what they're going to say, right? They might say something that changes your perspective on the entire class. You might start teaching the class a different way. So you never know. So don't avoid that kind of feedback, to, because in a way it devalues like what the students have to say and what they're experiencing. So just be open to that.
Thank you so much for that, Jacob. With the sake of time that we're up against, we're going to move directions and turn it over to the chat with Jane Bruin and Penny Lynn.
I want to thank all our panelists so much for joining us. We'd like to close out in a few minutes. So what has been amazing to me as I've been watching the chat comments is that the question would come up, and then one of the next comments from our student panelists would sort of tackle that very issue. So what I'd like to do with the few minutes we have left is first to ask Jane if there's anything that she would like to contribute, either based on her own takeaways or from the chat that she's been monitoring.
Thank you, Penny. I do have one question that I would like to ask maybe one or two of the panelists coming from the chat. I think you're right. Most of the questions got answered. When professors are trying to consider student fatigue or the best way to get feedback from a student, I think it's important for these panelists and other students as well. What's the best way to get feedback from you in front of class, outside of class? Like, if you could just say a couple of things about how you think a best practice is about getting feedback, or like have talking to your professor. I know you talked about it a little bit, but that would be a good question to answer. Like, maybe one person can answer that.
Ask personally outside of class, because I'm going to respond to somebody in front of my peers may be different from how I would respond to you in a one-on-one conversation when we can kind of get to know each other a little bit differently.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead, Jane.
So thank you. And then there is one more question, but I think what we'll do is, if there are more, like, these are such great questions, and I think what we can do is, if you have more questions, faculty and staff, anyone, I think if you can email me, what we'll do is we can prepare like a, maybe like a frequently asked questions and answers with our students and panels so that we can save time. I know Penny has things that she wants to talk about too. And so then I think this is an ongoing conversation, and the Center for Intercultural Student Development loves connecting students with people. So if you have other questions that you want answered, we can look at maybe making a document and having many more of our students answer that together, so that so then you get a better picture of what students are feeling and thinking about those things.
Great idea. So go ahead, and if you have questions that are pressing that you think would be helpful for our community to grapple a little bit with and to get the perspectives and insights of some of our student panelists or students of color, go ahead and flood Jane's inbox. Jane Bruin at the Center for Intercultural Student Development. I wanted to close out in a few minutes with, so I'm madly taking notes, right, on all the great stuff that our panelists said. And I tried to limit it and to just like a few comments that hopefully will resonate with our audience who's been with us today and help us wrap up and just take some good things and good thoughts and insights with us as we go off into our day and the rest of our weeks. So just a few statements here. Read the room and know yourself. Know that students of color may come into your classroom already with a level of discomfort. We need to clarify how to report microaggressions and other things that happen in our classrooms and spaces. And we need to make that reporting process really clear and transparent to everyone. We need to seek out resources and keep learning, address, acknowledge, advocate, and ask. Acknowledge the national situations, the national racial injustice and racialized situations that are happening, because that is the context in which we teach and learn, and in which our students are navigating life, and we are navigating life together. Reach out and know your students, value their perspectives, and then to this last point, to negotiate that relationship. Don't necessarily call them out or put them on the spot without approaching them and asking them in advance. But know that so many of our students are really, their voices and perspectives, let them know that their perspectives really matter and that we value them without putting on them the burden of educating us, right? We are in the business of educating and continuing to learn and be on this journey together. So with that, I want to, again, thank all our panelists and Kaisha Likely and Jane Brown, yay. And this is just the start of a conversation, right? We want to continue to be in conversation, to understand and know and listen to these important perspectives of people who are part of our community, a beloved and blessed part of our community. And then a couple notes to keep an eye on Calvin News for future diversity and inclusion training and learning events. Just so you know, you'll get a prompt soon for the resources to develop your own personal and meaningful diversity and inclusion statement to include in your course descriptions and syllabus. In the fall faculty conference, there'll be a session on diversifying your curriculum with Herb Fineweaver and two of his summer research students. And there'll be other resources this fall for dealing and kind of digging a deeper dive into microaggressions. And then coming up in the next few weeks, there will also be a session, kind of an introduction to anti-racism and what that could mean for us as individuals and as an institution to really embrace that. So with that, again, I'd like to thank our panelists and thank you for your time today and wish you all the best in as you prepare for the new year and a new semester together. Thank you.